What's up, guys? Today is Tuesday, November 8th, 2022. It is Election Day, and we are live from Youngstown Studios in downtown Youngstown, Ohio. My name is Justin Coffin, and this is the 330 Sports Show. So what we're going to do today is we're going to have lots of talk on, obviously, the sports world, what happened over the weekend, a lot of craziness in a lot of different sports. So we are going to get into college football, the Ohio State Buckeyes. They were in basically a hurricane this weekend in Chicago, had a crazy game there. We'll talk about that. Cleveland Cavaliers are now 8-2, starting off really red hot this season, had an unfortunate little meltdown at the end of the game last night. We'll talk about that, but a lot of their season coming up. The Houston Astros over the weekend won the World Series. We'll talk a little bit about that, but I got a couple really good, interesting, fun nuggets from that series and a couple little interesting side notes there. And we have seven teams still alive in the Mahoning Valley in the OHSAA playoffs. And obviously the Browns and Steelers were off this past weekend on byes, but we will have some really cool, interesting facts from the NFL weekend and obviously have the world of sports covered as a whole. Also want to say congratulations to Youngstown State men's and women's basketball team. Both tipped off yesterday. And both got wins. The YSU men beat Canisius, which is up by the Buffalo, New York area. And the YSU women got their home victory last night against Wofford in a game that turned out to be closer than I thought it might be. But the Penguins pulled away there at the end. So congratulations to both YSU men and women's basketball teams on getting their first win in the season. And Ohio State beat Robert Morris last night in their opening victory. So I haven't done a Top 5 Tuesday in a while, so I'm going to lead the show off with that because it is Election Day, and I thought this would be kind of fun. So out there on social media, and Joe, I'm going to need your help with this as well. And Joey, feel free to chime in as well, too. But we... You know, election, I'm not getting into anything politics here. Anybody knows me, that is not my favorite topic. I even put out there, there's an episode of South Park from 2004, I believe. And it's basically cast your vote between a douche and a turd sandwich and which one, because that's what you're going to get anyway. Again, there's some really good politicians out there. We're not going to name good or bad. I'm just going to stay away from that. But I thought this being a sports show, we would have a little fun in the election of what is the toughest thing to do in the sports world. So I put this out a few weeks ago on our social media pages, and I got a pretty good amount of feedback back. So I took some of my own information. I did some, you know, research on the web, and then I took some suggestions from people online that commented. So I put out 10 suggestions. And we're going to show those now. So here are the 10 things that kind of became the most frequently said or used between the three things that I did, between gathering people's information, between social media and internet research, and between some comments and stuff like that. So what I put out there was hitting a Major League Baseball pitcher. So not physically hitting them, but hitting a fastball, curveball, slider, whatever it might be from a major league pitcher. Getting in the box, whether you're a righty or lefty, hitting that major league pitcher. B, shooting below par. Anyone that is not an avid golfer, that doesn't golf 5-6 days a week, shooting par or below par is one of the most difficult things to do. I golf 5 to 6 times a year. And I usually shoot around, if I'm playing 18, I'm usually around like the mid 90s. So, you know, upper 40s per nine. And my lowest score I've ever shot was an 85. And you know, I've never been able to break 80. And, you know, par is either going to be 70 or 72. So I put that up there. The thing that inspired me, obviously, besides being election weekend, my sister this past weekend ran the New York City Marathon. And to me, that is one of the greatest accomplishments anyone does. We've obviously had Melanie and Julie. We've had Nicole. We've had Joe down here that have been the Youngstown Marathon people. That is a very, very difficult thing to do. So I think 1% of the world's population has completed a marathon. So I put that to the list. Bull riding. If you can ride, a professional bull rider has to, you know, like, I don't even know all the parameters, but 8 seconds. If you can last for 8 seconds on a, as a professional bull rider, that is an extremely difficult thing to do. I don't care if you're big, small, in between, whatever, that bull is going to jack you around basically and try to get you off of it as much as possible. Letter E, pole vaulting. So, and this is 15 feet or more in the air. So we recently had an Olympic gold medalist from the Cleveland area that won this past Olympic cycle. So that was another thing that I saw out there on the internet that people said, there's no way. I don't care how athletic you are. It's just a really, like, one, you got to not be afraid of heights. Two, you got to not be afraid of falling. Three, you got to be athletic enough to do it. So we're halfway there. So that's five options. So far, hitting a major league pitcher, shooting below par, finishing a marathon, riding a bull, and pole vaulting. That's five things. So let's go to the 6 through 10. A quadruple double in an NBA game. So to this is not something an average person can even do in a high school game. A quadruple double, for anyone that doesn't know what that is so you have five statistical categories, and you got to have four of them with 10 or more of these things. So points, rebounds, assists, steals, or blocks. So the last person to do this was David Robinson in 1994. He had 34 points, 10 assists, 10 rebounds, and 10 blocks. So he just barely met that threshold, but he was the last person to do it in an NBA game in 1994. So we're talking 28 years ago. Completing the Tour de France, letter G. I mean, what more can I say? Everybody can pretty much ride a bike, but can you ride a bike in the French hills, the French mountains, uphill, downhill? And if you've ever seen some of those cyclists that are professionals, world trained, that just crash, I mean, it's insane. It's absolutely insane. So that is an endurance race. That's another similar to a marathon type thing. And then this is one that I took from an online website. They said, I don't care how skilled you are. Most people can't even ice skate, and let alone landing a quad in figure skating. Another one was completing a NASCAR race safely. So you have to go, you know, not only be able to drive a car, navigate through all the traffic and handle the speed, but you have to be able to finish the race without crashing. That's a pretty difficult thing. And then the last one I put on here, this was just kind of a consensus, was stopping a penalty kick. So it's just a very difficult thing to do because it's you and you know, the player that's kicking the ball on a free kick with no defense. So those are the 10 things I came up with. We had lots of other submissions, like doing a backflip in gymnastics on the balance beam, stuff like that. So if you have any suggestions, drop them in the comments. So I'm going to bring in Joe. And Joey, feel free again too to jump in if you guys have anything. So Joe, out of the list of 10 that I have on there, if you could vote for one of them as the most difficult thing to do from your perspective, what would the most difficult one be?
Well, I'm going to say statistically, the quadruple double, because there are only certain number of people who can do it. And yes, of that list, they're even more limited.
Yes. Okay. All right. That's very good. Very good. Now, obviously, if we're Joey, what about you? What do you think? What would be the most difficult thing to do from your perspective on that list?
Mine, I'd have to say the pole vault.
The pull. Okay.
That takes a lot more. You got to have upper body strength. Then you got to be able to contort your body over the bar. I mean, me personally, I would say shooting par because, you know, I golf and I'm like you, never hit par. So me personally, that would be
okay.
But I think for everybody, the pole vault would probably be the hardest.
Okay. All right. All right. Very good. I'm always interested in people's opinions because there's differences in the casual athlete versus the professional athlete. Now, you know, so you could go find the best.
To be honest, though, yeah. Every one of them is out of my wheelhouse. There's not a single one.
I'm trying to think like, okay, so I'm going to go like, I don't really even have an answer right now, but I'm going to say my sister, who again, kind of inspired this, Shelley Marlowe, by the way, she ran the New York City Marathon this past weekend, which is just an amazing accomplishment. There were 60,000 runners in the New York City Marathon, 40,000 of them finished. So 66%, roughly 2/3, which is, you know, amazing, 40,000 people, but all those people have trained for that. So 2/3 of them finished, which is just an amazing accomplishment in itself. And like I said, and I believe it was Joe Midlick that said 1% of the world's population has completed a marathon. Now, that is something I think if you can dedicate the time and training to, out of this list of 10, that an average Joe, no pun intended, could go out and do. If you have enough time and dedication and honestly mental, I think it's more of a mental challenge than maybe a physical one.
So you're talking from like a skill set standpoint where you use your legs versus like, you know, shooting par, you have to develop something that you might not have to be able to do
that one. Exactly. Because some people are just generally more inclined to be more athletic, whether it's their build or their height or their weight or their strength. Like, I don't know, with bull riding, I might be able to stay on that bull for 2 seconds, but I'm going to get thrown off and hopefully don't get killed, you know? Landing a quad in figure skating for me, that's impossible because I can't even freaking ice skate. You know what I mean? Completing the Tour de France, I mean, if I'm riding my normal bike and I have an infinite amount of time to finish, and I can stop and get dinner and you know what I mean? Like take a break, take a nap. I could do that, but this is obviously a time trial type thing too. So I don't know. That's why I put together this. It's a pretty eclectic list. So you got baseball on there. You got basketball on there. No football things on there. Well, football if you include soccer. But I thought that was an interesting list. Someone,
you know what I think? When, you know, when every once in a while they bring a fan down on the field to kick a field goal, and like when you're in the stands and you watch a professional kicker do it, you're like, oh, I could probably do that.
Exactly.
You're from 10 yards away and you're, you know, pulling something trying to get it across the goal line.
Right. Exactly. Like, you know, if you ever see people warming up, like you said, for like a field goal attempt or something, if there's no defense, there's no snap, there's no hold, it's teed up for you. Sure, most people can probably go out there and kick like a 20-yarder or something. Right. But how many people are not going to be able to get that ball off the ground, are going to like slip and fall on their ass or whatever it might be? Yep. So I don't know. I think this is a very interesting list, and I'd love to hear some people's thoughts on what they think. Just for me on this list, like I know I'm not landing a quad in skating. I think a NASCAR, if I trained and could drive like 75 miles an hour and they let me drive in the right lane
with your
and the, all the and all the 150 miles an hour plus could drive in the left and be like, just, you know, be like that Sunday driver out there, like just pass, just get around me. So, well, I don't
and
know.
Those are the three, like the NASCAR one, if you gave you enough time, you could probably pull it off because you don't have to exert the energy. Go 70 miles an hour. Now the Tour de France one, like I don't even know if given a lot of time I would ever finish that one, because that's a long time.
Yeah,
and those are some rough hills.
Yeah.
The bull, I could go a second and a half. I train for 8 seconds on a regular basis.
Yeah.
So it, you know, that one, I, you know, longevity, yeah, that'd probably be an issue.
Well, let me ask this.
Sure.
out of all of those, like, you're not going to die trying to shoot below par. I mean, maybe you might throw a golf club or whatever here and there. But out of any of those, I mean, we'll take out the quadruple double too in the NBA. And the penalty kick. There's a lot of those where you can actually physically die trying. You get in the box against a major league pitcher, they bring in some chin music, hit you. I mean, there's a chance you could die there. Finishing a marathon, if you're not in, you know, you're not physically ready and trained, you know. The bull riding, definitely. That bull could straight up kill. Yeah, I think that's the most dangerous. Pole vaulting, all right, hypothetically, let's say you go up to pole vault. Now there's the mat on the opposite side if you clear it. What if you don't get it and you fall back the other way? I mean,
or just skewer yourself.
Yeah, I mean, you can really impale yourself, whatever. Quadruple double, we took out. I mean, even riding a bike, some of those hills and switchbacks, you're going pretty damn fast. You slip and fall. I mean, who's to say you're not falling off a cliff, or you could smack your head pretty hard or whatever it might be. Now we're getting a little morbid here, but you know, landing a quad and figure skating. I mean, there's you slip, hit your head on that ice, man. Woo.
Yeah. There's a 0% chance on me on that one. No way.
We had a guest on our show. She used to work for WKBN. Now she's up in Cleveland, doing some work up there, but she did like, Danny, was her name. She did like professional skating in her career, and I would actually love to get her opinion on that. Now, NASCAR, you've been affiliated with NASCAR in the past and just auto racing in general. I think people see it on TV. You don't realize how fast those cars are moving.
For sure. Like, yeah, not if you, and again, like if you watch the pace car, which feels like it's creeping,
yeah,
is going 70 miles an hour, and it puts it in perspective.
No doubt. I've heard from people too that have been on those NASCAR tracks, you know, and we're talking like these really steep angles,
yeah.
And it's like, yeah, we're driving in a left turn, and you can joke around all about that, but it takes a lot of skill and a lot of strength to be able to maneuver those vehicles.
Yeah, because you're not just like holding the steering wheel at an angle, yeah, and just driving around like this. These things are wild and they're bucking at you, and you got to steer into them. There's a lot of science goes into it.
No doubt. And stopping a penalty kick, I mean, you're not going to physically get mauled or whatever, but you know, that's a fairly safe one, I guess we could say there. But
well, you're 100% chance you're going to have to dive. There's no way that they're going to kick it right at you, right? So you're going to dive. That's dangerous. And you have a ball screaming at you 100 plus miles an hour. That's dangerous too. You can't call that one safe.
Exactly.
I'll protect that dude.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That's fair. Is there anything for either of you? And there's thousands of things out there in sports that is not on that list that you think could be added to that list. I'm kind of putting you on the spot, but I had mentioned the balance beam. Someone had wrote in. They said doing a flip on the balance beam. You got one?
High dive and swimming.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good one, especially if you're one of those people that has a fear of heights. Mm. I mean, that high dive is pretty damn high. And you don't, could you imagine if you weren't trained, you did the high dive and you went in and you did a full like belly smacker too? Oh, you're not going to die, but that will jar the body.
Well, I thought I was being a funny guy. We went to the cliffs in Nevada, or I think it was Nevada, Lake Powell, not Lake Powell. Where's those big caverns that you boat down in between?
Oh, Lake Mead?
Well, okay, we'll go with it. Okay. Whatever.
In that area. Some
cliff jumping into the water, and I thought, watch, I'm going to be funny and do a little belly smacker and splash everybody. And this was from maybe 7 foot, right?
Okay.
And so it's not a high dive, but I was like, that was a bad idea. Yeah. That freaking hurts.
That will jar the body enough where you will be in the hospital or chiropractor at minimum for several weeks. So, okay. I will keep that out there. That will be on our social media pages, but I'm very interested to see what people think. So at your leisure, just put a letter in the comment, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, or J, or if you have another one, drop it in the comments later on, like I said, or at your convenience if you're watching the show later on.
I have one more question about that. Like, if you take you and you compare yourself against all people in this listening audience,
sure,
which one do you think you would be in the top bracket for as far as competing?
For
like, if you did all of those, comparison with all of your listening audience, which do you think you would rank the best in?
Well, I mean, basketball is a sport I played and coached for a long, long time.
Do you think the audience would get closest to a quadruple double? Or not exactly, but in the
probably yes. Okay. Yeah. I think if you gave me enough time to train against a major league fastball, if I knew what pitch was coming, I could at least make contact, you know, after a while, you know, like if I got in the box enough, you know, at a batting cage, I think I could. But if it's a major league pitcher and they're throwing multiple pitches and you're guessing what's coming, I think that would be very, very difficult. So I'm going to say that one. I'm going to stick with that basketball one just because, you know,
so
that's
basketball
my,
would be the one
because I think there's a lot there's, if I golfed more, I think I would be better at it. But again, it's just like finishing a marathon. You have to practice and you have to plan and you have to do so much just to be able to get to that skill level. And, you know, I have friends that are solid golfers and still can't break par because, you know, one bad hole or a couple bad holes here and there and you're thrown off. I would like, her name's Katie Nagate, I believe, but I'd be interested in getting her opinion on the pole vault with where that ranks in 1 through 10 with this list too. So we will keep that up there for your leisure. Now, let me bring up really a leisure sport that I think most people can do that would be fun. Actually, I was just talking to Jake, who works and is part owner down at Steel Valley Brew Works, and they're putting together a bocce league Tuesdays and Thursdays. It's going to start, I believe, as soon as next week. So it's going to be $100 a team. And again, that will be Tuesdays and Thursdays. It is just a lot of fun. You do not have to be you don't have to be as good as shooting par in golf or, you know, whatever. But this is a league that will be a lot of fun. It will be either Tuesday or Thursday nights. I believe 8 teams both nights. And then you play like 7 games throughout a few weeks. And then they seed you 1 versus 8, 2 versus 7, 3 versus 6. And you kind of have a playoffs. And that goes on and on and on. So I'll have more details for you on that on Thursday's show. But that will be a lot of fun and something to support our local businesses and get out in our community. And again, just something to do for fun on the weekdays around the Youngstown, Boardman area. So, Joe, the Browns did not play this weekend, yeah. But obviously a little bit of a stress-free Sunday / Monday for Browns fans and or Steeler fans this year. Steeler fans have had to deal with a lot of losing, which they're not used to this year too. So
But the big victory is that Kareem Hunt is going to be at least with us till the end of the year.
Yeah. Yeah. So we will have Kareem Hunt. We are 3 games away from Deshaun Watson being the starter. Deshaun Watson, here's how fast the season has gone. Do you remember way back when he wasn't allowed to practice till week X? Well, that's next week. He is allowed to return to practice for the Cleveland Browns next, I believe it's next Monday. So, I mean, the season where, again, it's weird to say, the 17 games throws me off still because I want to say halfway through the season, but we have 8 games down, 9 games to go. So basically at the halfway point of the season. But through this NFL season, we're just going to, you know, go through some of the, I'm not going to go through all the scores and the games and stuff like that, but I want to go through some interesting notes from this past weekend in the NFL, because once again, the NFL really never disappoints. You know, there's some clunkers that go out there, but there's just some really, really interesting, interesting games out there. Philadelphia, the Philadelphia Eagles remain undefeated. Now, they have the easiest remaining schedule in the NFL, which is quite interesting because, you know, they're about halfway there. Will they go undefeated? We will see. Tom Brady is 1-0 while being a divorced man and surpasses 100,000 passing yards in his career. Joe Mixon, who has stunk this year, scored 5 touchdowns this past weekend for Cincinnati. Now, this next piece of information is really interesting. Frank Reich was the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. He was fired Monday morning. The guy they replaced him with, is Jeff Saturday. You might know Jeff Saturday. Sometimes he's a commentator on ESPN. He actually coaches a high school football team in Georgia currently. He is some sort of advisor for the Colts, you know, like an analyst or, you know, comes in and gives some speeches here and there. They made him the head coach yesterday, which is very interesting because he has no head coaching experience in college or in the pros. And a lot of people are really irked at this because there's a lot of very qualified assistants that are, you know, whether they be white or black, you know, they were passed over. And a lot of people are really miffed by this because they're like, well, this guy, just because he was a good football player for your team, you know, back during the Peyton Manning era, he was the center. He now becomes the head coach. Now, I don't know if that implies they're tanking and trying to get a draft pick or they're just like, screw it, whatever. Let's just bring in one of our own and we'll see. What do you think about that?
Wasn't there a movie where they put somebody in a sports thing that was just a regular person and a bunch of other sports team tried hiring the whatever and they get creamed? What am I thinking of?
That's happened. That's been a movie trope over the years. Like Little Big League when the kid like inherits the Minnesota Twins and he's like 12 years old and then like fires the regular manager.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think like Whoopi Goldberg became the head coach of a Knicks in a movie, you know, so like stupid things like that happens in movies. This is real life.
Yeah. Mate,
and I mean, it's not like he doesn't have football knowledge, but let's hypothetically say, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Sure. Let's hypothetically say you are by the way, they have two former head coaches as assistants on that team. Let's say you were an upcoming an up and coming assistant coach that wanted a head coaching job and they passed you over for someone that doesn't even work in the organization or had no experience whatsoever as a head coach. How would that make you feel?
Well, I'm a little bit of a marketer. So I tell myself that I'm such a good assistant coach that they didn't want to lose me in my current position and ruin me in a head coaching position.
Okay.
That's right. BS.
Yeah, well, yeah. And being a head coach, I can attest to this, is great. And it's also awful at the same time, yeah, because there's, you know, there's a lot of pressure on you. There's a lot of expectation. And yeah, whether it's good or bad, you know, people will find some sort of fault in it. But I just don't like the fact that they passed over some other potential assistants that have that experience. But again, it's,
and you think it's just the name, like the
I think part of it is, I wonder if they're going to actually start tanking now, because they have a decent roster, but they have no quarterback situation. They benched Matt Ryan, who is kind of on his last legs. They bring in their backup, who is Sam Ellinger, who was a quarterback at Texas, but not really an NFL quarterback. And it's like, I almost wonder now if they're trying to get up there in the top five to get a draft pick, maybe, you know, or your CJ Stroud or your Bryce Young or whoever it might be, to try to get up there and navigate your way to a top five pick. So
interesting.
Yeah, it's a conspiracy theory.
What if he becomes the best head coach ever?
I mean, then that's a hell of a story. And you know, so again,
goes
yeah.
bad, you get a better draft pick. It goes good, you get a story that they'll make series about.
So maybe they're in a no-lose situation here, and they just got guys like me saying, what the hell are they doing? So
you're just jealous because they didn't knock on your door and offer you the job.
I have zero football coaching experience. That's actually true. I have as much head coaching experience at the NFL and college level as Jeff Saturday. But that's true. So, but good luck to him. Hopefully it works out, but we'll see. A former Buckeye. This is great because Justin Fields has been much maligned with Chicago Bears. They put him in a terrible, terrible situation his first year and a half with the Bears. Finally got him a decent wide receiver, but he set an NFL record this past weekend for quarterbacks. They put up 32 points against the Dolphins in a loss. But Justin Fields set the regular season record with 178 rushing yards for the Chicago Bears at the quarterback position, which is the most in a regular season game. I mean, that's unheard of. You know, running backs barely eclipsed the 150 mark, let alone what he put up, nearly 180. So
well, you ask any of those scrambling quarterbacks how that works out on the long term, and I would probably not rely on him to be your leading rusher.
Exactly. Yeah, long term. But he's basically playing for his life. You know, he just hopefully is sliding and getting out of bounds and avoiding some of those big hits. Do you know, hypothetically, way back when, this is about 2014, I think, who is the leading rusher all time? This happened in a playoff game. Now, he broke Michael Vick's record previous. That was a regular season. Quarterback-wise? Yeah. This is a guy who has been very sort of exiled from the NFL for taking a knee.
Colin Kaepernick.
Really? Was the former leader of this, and Justin Fields broke that record. So interesting. Very interesting stat there, I thought. So a member of the Miami Dolphins, who the Cleveland Browns will play this weekend. Listen to this, these numbers. These are insane numbers. Tyreek Hill, who was traded from the Kansas City Chiefs to the Miami Dolphins, is on a record-setting pace. 76 catches. This is in 9 games. 1,104 yards. The NFL record for catches in a season is 149, so he is on that pace. And the NFL record for receiving yards is 1,964. So he is on a plus 2,000-yard pace for the season. Now, his benefit, he gets 17 games, whereas Michael Thomas and Calvin Johnson had 16 games to do the same feat. Mm-hmm. But if you break that down, still over those 16 games, he's right on that pace to break that record. So just very interesting. Hopefully the Browns can slow him down this weekend. And then one other nugget I've pulled out this weekend, Cameron Dicker, and this is just such a great name, Cameron Dicker the kicker. He was a kicker. He hit the game-winning field goal for the LA Chargers this weekend. He was released earlier in the season from the Philadelphia Eagles, who he hit a game-winning kick for them earlier in the season. So Cameron Dicker, and I'll never forget Gus Johnson. I think Dicker was the kicker for the Texas Longhorns, and he beat Oklahoma in a game. And I'll never forget, he had a classic call, Dicker, the kicker for the win. And, you know, that's just like, that's pretty cool for him, though. Like, two teams, he has, you know, basically won two games for two different NFL franchises in one season. So that's pretty cool. Not many people can say that. And thought that was interesting. So let's take a look at the AFC kind of playoff picture as it stands through 9 weeks of the regular season. Now, a lot of teams have only played 8 games, but you'll see. So the number one seed right now is the Buffalo Bills, who actually lost to the New York Jets this weekend. And Josh Allen, there's some rumors out there that he might be hurt. His elbow might be hurt. So we'll see about that. Kansas City is who won in overtime. There was like 6 games or 5 games this weekend that ended in 20-17 scores. I thought that was interesting, but Kansas City was one of those games, beating the Titans in overtime this weekend. Baltimore right now would be the 3 seed. Tennessee would be the 4 seed. So those are your division leaders. And then the 5 seed would be the New York Jets. The Miami Dolphins would be 6, and the LA Chargers would be 7. Now, there's all these teams in the hunt until, you know, whatever week. But Patriots, Bengals, Colts, Browns, Broncos, Jags, Raiders, Steelers are 15th in the AFC, and the Texans are 16 right now in the AFC. You never, never see the Pittsburgh Steelers sitting at 2-6.
Not eliminated in November.
Not eliminated in November. So we can't scratch anyone officially off, but it's getting pretty close. And look at that AFC East too. Every team is above 500. That's pretty amazing. 6-2, 6-3, 6-3, and 5-4. Pretty impressive stats there out of the AFC East. NFC, you got Philadelphia, Minnesota, Tampa, and Seattle. Tampa is sitting right now at 4-5, leading the NFC South. And the Browns will play those same Buccaneers in a few weeks here in Cleveland. So that should be an interesting game. Tom Brady 1-0, as I mentioned, since the divorce. And we'll see what happens with that. But I think the Browns actually have a pretty good chance in that game. We are not going to get into our Cleveland Browns preview until Thursday, but I'll share just a few nuggets with you about the Browns and the Dolphins. They have only played 20 times, believe it or not, in their history. The Dolphins lead the all-time series 11-9. The last matchup, the Browns won in 2019 with a 41-24 victory. That was under, what's his name? Why can't I think of his name? Who was the former Browns coach? Man, he only lasted a year.
Davis?
No. Davis was like in the early 2000s. Why can't I think of his name? I don't know.
I was only half listening.
Freddie Kitchens.
Is he there really?
Yeah.
Whoa.
And that was the last time the Browns beat the Dolphins. So that was in 2019. But the Dolphins are 2-0 in games started, or I'm sorry, 6-0 in games started where Tua starts and finishes the game. He's actually missed or been knocked out of 3 games this year. And they have lost all 3 of those. So Myles Garrett, get after Tua's ass. And let's see what we can do. Browns are 1-2 on the road this year. Dolphins are 3-1 at home. So we'll have plenty more for that on Thursday. But yeah, Freddie Kitchens, man. It's so how he can just drift out of your mind so easily.
There's 97 coaches, dude, over the last 20 years.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, exactly. Real quick on the World Series and Major League Baseball, it came to an end on Saturday night. The Houston Astros win the series over the Philadelphia Phillies 4-2. You know, the Houston Astros, whether you like them or not, I think there's a lot more that are in the not category. They have almost quickly become one of the least liked teams in all of sports. Like, so I'm talking like, you know, Lakers and the Yankees, maybe they've surpassed the Celtics, you know, teams like that that have a long tradition of winning. But since that scandal, that cheating scandal with the Astros, a lot of people can't stand them. But the Houston Astros, give them credit, they are a very good baseball team and obviously have won the Major League Baseball World Series this year. So
anybody who beats up on the Yankees and their stock value goes up.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, even if the Guardians would have beat the Yankees, they would have had to beat the Astros to even get to the World Series. So, but that is the bar they are shooting for. And I put on there, their magic number is now 162 for the 2023 season. So we'll see there. But two interesting notes from the World Series. I don't know if you guys heard about this, but Mattress Mack is a mattress store owner in the Houston area. He placed a $10 million bet on the Astros to win the World Series. When he placed the bet, they were plus 750. So that means you get, hypothetically, if you're betting $100, you would get 750 back on that $100 bet. So he bet 10 million. He just won $75 million, which is the largest legal payout in sports betting history. Pretty amazing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Blown away.
Yeah. And I mean, don't, you know, if this guy would have lost, we wouldn't have felt that bad for him. He owns a chain of mattress and furniture stores around the Houston area, but apparently he had some sort of promotion. If you bought X number of furniture, I think it was $3,000 or more of furniture, he would pay it back if the Astros won the World Series. So he was basically in a no-lose situation. He's like, okay, well, if the Astros lose, then I'm going to get all that money and not have to pay it back, whether it's insurance or whatever. But if they win, it's free advertising, and probably he's probably got some sort of insurance that'll cover a lot of that. Or he just won $75 million. He can afford to pay a little bit of that back. So very, very interesting there. And then other than that, too, Dusty Baker, who is 73 years old, is the oldest manager to ever win a World Series, passing Jack McKeon. So pretty great for Dusty Baker. He is one of my favorite people in the Astros organization. He's just a good guy. And someone told me this, I can't remember who, but they said, doesn't he look like James Earl Jones? And I'm like, and so I looked it up and it's a thing. So people compare Dusty Baker to James Earl Jones a lot. So I thought that was really interesting. So, all right, moving on to basketball. I'm going to keep this fairly short, but the Cleveland Cavaliers Unfortunately, last night, their 8-game winning streak came to an end in an unfortunate blown fourth quarter lead. But we're going to go over some of the positives over this streak, too. So 8-2 right now, second best record in the league. On, I believe it was Friday night. Yeah, it was Friday night. Evan Mobley had 8 blocks against the Detroit Pistons, which is third most in franchise history. Also in that game, Kevin Love, who Joe knows, we just love Kevin Love around here, became the first Cavs player to ever record 20 or more points, 10 or more assists, and 8 or more rebounds off the bench in a game for the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Cavs right now, after 10 games, have the fourth best offense in the league and the second best defense in the league, which overall net puts them at the number one team in the league by scoring margin right now at plus 11. The Cavs beat the Los Angeles Lakers and LeBron James on Sunday in LA. And listen to this. The last time the Cleveland Cavaliers beat a team that LeBron James played on, their starting lineup was Baron Davis, Anthony Parker, Alonzo G, J.J. Hickson, and Ryan Hollins. I left out the N in Hollins, but Ryan Hollins. That was the last time they beat them. I believe that was in 2011 when he was a member of the Miami Heat. And here's another weird thing. Think about when LeBron was on the Heat. He has now been on the Los Angeles Lakers longer than he was on the Miami Heat, which is a really weird thing to think about. Time just goes fast. And as I mentioned last night, the Cavs actually had a 112-98 lead with about 5 minutes to go and just couldn't hold on. And the Clippers knocked them off 119-117 to snap that streak. But over that 8-game streak, the Cavs knocked off the Bulls, Wizards, Magic, Knicks, Pistons, Lakers, and the Celtics twice to get to those 8 games. So this week, what's on tap for the Cleveland Cavaliers? They will play tomorrow night, Wednesday, November 9th at the Kings, Friday, November 11th at the Golden State Warriors, and Sunday, November 13th, back at home to end a long road trip against the Minnesota Timberwolves. So that's what's up for the Cavs. If we look at just some of their stat leaders, over the course of the first 10 games, Darius Garland, who's only played in a handful of games, 19 points, 3 rebounds, 8.5 assists per game. Donovan Mitchell, my goodness, 31.2 points a game, 4 rebounds, 6 assists. Caris LeVert's playing some solid basketball. Evan Mobley's playing great. Jared Allen had over 20 rebounds last night, 13.5 points, 12 rebounds per game. Dean Wade's playing some great basketball. Jetty Osman off the bench. Kevin Love, who once again, Joe and I just are so fond of, just one of our favorite players, is doing a great job. The one guy that really has been the huge disappointment for the Cavs this year, and he's a great defender, so don't get me wrong, but Isaac Okoro, former, I believe, 6th pick overall in the draft, in the 2020 draft. He's only 21 years old. He's very young. But they expected a lot more out of him entering his third season, and he has just been a major disappointment thus far into the season, only averaging about 2 points and 1.5 rebounds per game. So they need him to basically knock down some threes and stretch the defense out a little bit. All right. Now, I had mentioned our old friend LeBron James before. Now, the Cavs' previous big three was LeBron, Kyrie, and Kevin Love. If you look at this situation, if I would have told you 5 years ago which player would be in the best spot 5 years from now, you'd probably say LeBron, then you'd probably say Kyrie, then you'd probably say Kevin Love. No, it is actually flipped. Kevin Love is in the best situation. Now, is Kevin Love the best player on this list? No, but he is in by far the best situation with the Cleveland Cavaliers, a very young, up-and-coming team, high energy, knows his role, playing great basketball. LeBron is still putting up some great statistics, but on a very average to below average team. And Kyrie Irving can't stay out of his own way, making inappropriate remarks, you know, tweeting anti-Semitic things, suspended by the Brooklyn Nets right now for 5 games by the team's owner. So this wasn't an NBA suspension. This was by the team's owner. So Kyrie, who has joked around about being a flat earther and stuff, the guy's just a great basketball player that's a little bit of a nut job behind the scenes. And I don't know. Part of me feels bad for him, but part of me is like, you know, just shut up. Shut up. So LeBron obviously is doing some great things, putting up some great stats, just unfortunately on a bad team. And Kevin Love, again, is just embracing the role that he is playing and doing some great things for the Cleveland Cavaliers. All right. Let's switch now to college football, the Ohio State Buckeyes. We're going to do two more segments here. But Ohio State, as I mentioned, played in basically a typhoon this weekend. So consistent winds between 25 and 30 miles an hour the entire game. And then for much of that time, there were gusts between 40 and 50 miles an hour. If you've ever tried to throw a football in a little bit of a breeze, you know it will affect the flight of the ball. Try throwing it in 40 or 50 mile per hour winds, and you will see what happens there. So obviously this game hit the under. The total before the weather forecast was 65.5. Then the weather forecast came out, it dropped to 55.5. And then, as you can see, only 28 points total were scored in this game. So obviously the under was almost a lock, which I'm sure a lot of people made some money on that this past weekend. Northwestern got the cover. Northwestern was a 38.5 point underdog, and it was 7-7 at the half. This was a little bit of a, I don't want to call it a nerve-wracking game, but a very frustrating game. Ohio State just could not do what it wanted to. Ohio State, obviously, as we know, is a high-level passing offense that uses the run to set up the pass. They had to run the ball, and for the first half, really didn't do a good job of it. Northwestern actually outgained them in yardage, 285 to 283. They both had about 205, 206 rushing yards. Listen to this. CJ Stroud only 76 passing yards in this game. Still the favorite for the Heisman Trophy, but Northwestern ran 76 plays to Ohio State's 61. Ohio State did lead in yards per play with 4.6 yards per play. We're going to skip the Buckeye leaves this week, but let's take a look at Ohio State's schedule. They only have three regular season games. We're 75% of the way through the season. And as you can see, they got Indiana. I'll be actually at that game this weekend. You go to Maryland, and then you're home for Michigan, the biggest game of the year coming up on November 26th. So bunch of very important games coming up. Maryland might be a little bit of a challenge. Indiana should probably be a pretty easy game this weekend. And then obviously the big one with Michigan. Even if Michigan was just an average team this year, which they're not, they're a very good team. That game would be a challenge, but we'll see what Ohio State has in store. But let's give you a little report card on the Buckeyes and what they have done this year. We'll talk a little bit about Michigan here in a minute. But Ohio State is still scoring 45.8 points a game, which is number one in the country. They're still averaging 7.42 yards per play, which is number one in the country. They are tied with Tennessee for 53 offensive touchdowns, which is number one in the country. Now, yards per game dropped significantly over the past 2 weeks. They're only number 14 in yards per game, but they're still averaging nearly 500 yards per game on offense. On defense, 15.8 points per game. They're top 10 in every major defensive statistical category, which is fantastic. 15.8 points per game, 4.41 yards per play allowed, which is seventh best. They've only allowed 16 offensive touchdowns by their opponent this year, and they're only giving up about 272 yards per game, which is number sixth in the country. So good stuff out of the Ohio State defense. CJ Stroud, I just want to throw out one little statistical anomaly with him from this past game. So I mentioned a lot of Ohio State fans get on CJ Stroud for not running the ball. They're used to a lot of JT Barrett, Braxton Miller, just running quarterbacks, Terrell Pryor, quarterbacks that have been very mobile and run the ball a lot. This is not his game set or skill set, but this was a very, like I said, an anomaly. He threw for 76 yards on Saturday. He ran for 79 yards and a couple much needed big runs when the Buckeyes needed to have them. So I thought that was really good for him stepping up this past weekend for the Buckeyes. So let's take a look at the Big Ten Conference standings real quick in the East. You got basically it's a two horse race in the entire Big Ten. You got Ohio State and Michigan. Penn State is the number 13 team in the country at 7-2. And Illinois lost to Michigan State this year. Michigan State is 4-5. Illinois was the number 14 ranked team and lost to them. So that Big Ten West is a big old mess if you look at it. So Illinois is 4-2 in conference. And look at all those teams. The next four teams are all 3-3. So that will be a race to see who gets to the Big Ten championship game. And the reward will be to play the Ohio State-Michigan winner. So not a great reward for whoever gets that. So it was, as I mentioned, a crazy weekend in college football. Let's just go over a couple things here. We had the number one team in the country playing the number three team in the country. Georgia just beats up Tennessee, bullies them on defense 27-13. And I don't really even think it was as close as that. Tennessee loses their first game of the year. Notre Dame upsets and blows out Clemson and Dabo Swinney. And Clemson fans on social media were like giving it to Ohio State fans in the afternoon, just saying, oh, how's that offense going against the 1-7 team? And then Ohio State, you know, obviously won the game. And then Clemson goes out and absolutely lays a clunker against Notre Dame. Notre Dame gets a huge win and dominates that game from start to finish, 35-14. So Clemson is pretty much going to be out of the playoff race. They fall from number four, and I'll show you where they're at in the rankings here soon. LSU, number 10, which a lot of people were like, why are they number 10? But they pulled off a huge, huge upset over number six, Alabama, 32-31. I can't stand Brian Kelly. He is the LSU coach, but I was really happy LSU knocked off Alabama. Alabama now, for all intents and purposes, is out of the college football playoff. That is their second loss of the season. And just an awesome, you know, there's a good chance they probably don't even make it to the SEC title game in the West. So very, very interesting there. And a ballsy move, honestly, by Brian Kelly going for two. I thought that was the right move and good job there. Michigan State, as I mentioned, upset Illinois. And TCU remains undefeated. They were the number seven team in the country. They're gonna jump up, but they hold off Texas Tech 34-24. They will play the Texas Longhorns this weekend. So that will be a must-see game this coming weekend. And then let's talk a little YSU. YSU, they beat Illinois State. They've had two back-to-back victories in the last few minutes. They moved to 6-3 overall, 4-2 in conference. YSU struggled the last few years and finally rounding out into shape this year, getting some good running back play, some decent quarterback play. So Jaleel McLaughlin is the running back for YSU. He has 1,277 yards on the season. He only needs 219 more yards over the final two games, which is about 110 yards per game, to become the all-time leading rusher in college football history. Now, that is a lot of people wouldn't count that because that's not at the highest level, but this was in all levels of college football. So we have a real star here in Youngstown, Jaleel McLaughlin. And I know he signed an NIL deal with Matt and Youngstown Clothing Company. So I thought that was pretty cool there too. Kent State, a team from the 330, fell on Tuesday to Ball State. So that was a whole week ago. Akron Zips were on bye, and Mount Union, who we know year in, year out is great, gets the win 34-28 over John Carroll to move to 9-0. So that's a look at college football. We're going to talk just a little bit about what I think might happen tonight. College football rankings for week number two are out. And again, these rankings don't mean a whole lot until obviously after the season's over to see where who gets placed where. But this is just my interpretation of where they'll be. I think Georgia will be one. Ohio State will be two. I think Michigan jumps up to three. I think TCU jumps up to four. And I think you have Tennessee and Oregon right there on the cusp. But the rest of the teams, I think these are really going to be these six teams for four spots. And we'll see what happens, but they're, it's basically resume building, and I'm going to show you the resumes of the top six teams here next. So let's take a look at Georgia's resume. Georgia is obviously 9-0, 6-0 in conference. They have wins over number 5 Tennessee, number 6 Oregon, and they also beat their rival Florida. What's left for them? They have at Mississippi State, at Kentucky, and home for Georgia Tech. Ohio State, the number 2 team, 9-0, 6-0 in the Big Ten. Their best wins over number 14, Penn State. And now Notre Dame jumps back into the top 25. They are at number 20 now. Michigan, their resume. Michigan has played one of the worst schedules so far in college football. But again, you can only play who is on your schedule. But their non-conference schedule is the worst in all of college football. They play teams like Hawaii and UConn. And I can't even remember the third one, but another very bad team. They have Nebraska at home, and then they will finish out with two ranked opponents as it stands now. Home for Illinois, who's number 20, and then obviously the big one at the number 2 Ohio State Buckeyes on November 26th. And then TCU, their resume. They are also 9-0, 6-0 in the Big 12. Their best wins are number 23 Kansas State and Oklahoma State, who fell out of the top 25 this week. They have 3 games left before the Big 12 title game. This weekend is the big one at number 18 Texas. That will be a huge game for TCU. They're also at Baylor and home for Iowa State to finish out the season. And then the two other teams with losses. So there's only 4 remaining undefeated teams. It's those top 4. So it's pretty easy to rank them. But number 5 and number 6, I put Tennessee there at 5, 8-1, 5-1. Obviously, Tennessee has 2 top 10 wins, beating Alabama, who's now number 10, and beating number 7 LSU. They also beat Florida. Their loss was at number 1 Georgia, so that's a pretty good resume there for the Tennessee Volunteers. They have Missouri, South Carolina, and Vanderbilt left, 3 teams they will easily beat, in my opinion, and finish 11-1. So we'll see what happens. Georgia's basically a lock for the playoff. I think Georgia is the one for sure lock. The rest of the teams are in flux, but we'll see. So maybe I should say there's 3 teams for 5 spots if we just assume Georgia is in it, because Georgia can even go to the SEC title game and lose and still be in the college football playoff. And then the last team I have on there is number 6 Oregon, who their best win was versus number 9 UCLA. Their loss was also to number 1 Georgia. And what's left for them? They have number 24 Washington this week, number 13 Utah next week, and then at their rival Oregon State to finish out the year. So not an easy schedule for Oregon to finish out the year. So we will see. So all of this stuff, there's a lot of commentary, there's a lot of talk, you know, people like me, you know national people on ESPN or whatever, talking heads, there's going to be a lot of speculation on this, but we have to let it play out and let's just see what happens. But I just wanted to give you my thoughts on the team's resume. And then finally, let's just real quick talk local high school football and the teams that are still alive. I'll tell you their matchups on Thursday, but there's only 7 teams still alive locally in the high school football playoffs. Those teams are in Division 3, Canfield and Ursuline, who will play each other this coming weekend. In Division 4, we have West Branch. In Division 5, we have South Range and Cardinal Mooney, which is a big surprise to me. And then in Division 7, Warren JFK and Southern Local, who will also play each other this weekend. So at the very least, we'll have 2 teams still alive in the regionals next weekend. So that is a look at high school football, college football, pro football, and we threw in some Cavs talk and some obviously some election stuff there at the beginning, just for what is the most difficult thing in the sports world. So I appreciate you guys for watching. For Joey, this is a Youngstown Studio production, and this was the 330 Sports Show. Appreciate you guys watching. We will see you on Thursday.
Thank you for listening to this show on Youngstown Studio. If you like our programming, we invite you to subscribe to our YouTube channel, follow our Facebook page, or subscribe to your favorite podcast platform like iTunes or Spotify. This is original Youngstown content, and we would appreciate you sharing the video.